This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know around here we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to school to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, celebrating over 70 years of service to financial advisors, their clients, and institutions worldwide. Putnam Investments, a world of investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Here we are, 2 years into a financial crisis, and regulators are still trying to control the banking industry. Elsewhere, deals are being done, and low inflation may wind up costing you more than you think. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
American Public Media presents the Marketplace Whiteboard, videos unwrapping the basics of the financial crisis. You can watch them anytime at marketplace.org.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Today is the 1st of September, Tuesday, and it is, as always, great to have you here. But where does one start on a day like today? We could do the straight economic news that manufacturing has posted its first gains in a year and a half, and that there's a glimmer of hope in housing, and yes, I know you've heard that before. Or we could go with the stock market. Traders knuckled under today on fears that the tear they've been on since March has been too exuberant, if I could coin a phrase. Or we could go to banks. Bank of America is said to be on the verge of paying back part of its $45 billion federal bailout today. The Europeans are making some banking news, too. The continent's two biggest economies want the rest of the developed world to join them in cracking down on what they call greedy bankers. German Chancellor Angela Merkel and French President Nicolas Sarkozy are calling on the G20 summit in Pittsburgh later this month to cut the banking industry down to size. From the European desk in London, Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports.
Chancellor Merkel and President Sarkozy want the G20 summit to pass a raft of restrictive measures, limiting the size of banks and, above all, curbing bonuses. Not surprising that Brian Capon of the British Banking Association isn't keen on the idea.
While we're working in an international banking market, you have to pay the going international rate to get the best people, and each country is going to want to employ those best people.
But Merkel and Sarkozy seem to believe they have a crucial ally in their fight. Britain has Europe's biggest collection of banks, and Prime Minister Gordon Brown has been making anti-banker noises.
The short-term bonus culture in banks has got to end.
A Franco-German-British alliance at the G20 summit would be quite something, but Edward Haddas of the financial website Breaking Views says there's less to Brown's threats than meets the eye.
So far, I think it's more a matter of courting headlines and actually doing anything.
He doesn't believe the British and American leaders have any stomach for a crackdown on bankers.
They're worried that the banking system, which is still very fragile, would get into another set of problems if they started to interfere too much with pay.
And he points out that both Sarkozy and Merkel have made it clear they won't bash their bankers unless the US and the UK do the same. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
If you've been keeping track, you know inflation's not that big a deal right now, and ordinarily that's a good thing. But when the September Consumer Price Index is reported, you might want to listen up, because it could affect how much you can put into your 401k. Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson reports.
Right now, you can stash up to $16,500 a year pre-tax into your retirement account. If you're 50 or older, you can put in even more, $22,000 a year. The limits are set by the IRS based on the level of inflation, but inflation has been negative since March. And Bill McLean of the consulting firm Mercer says,
if the inflation pattern that we've seen during the year holds through September, then the cap on deferrals may actually go down next year for the first time.
Now, Mercer says less than 10% of those who contribute to a 401k plan give as much as they're allowed to give. And most of those who do are people who make a lot of money. But others are ordinary middle-class folks trying to make up for losses racked up over the past year.
Many people are working hard to rebuild their accounts, especially those that are closer to retirement. And those are the people that are more likely to be contributing up to the limit.
With warnings like that, you'd think retirement advocacy groups would be up in arms. But David Certner, legislative policy director at AARP, says people saving for retirement have more pressing concerns.
I think the big issue for most people right now is really they're concerned about their retirement security. That means being able to save as much as possible. But for a good number of people, it really means making sure they can hold on to the job they have or being able to find employment as well.
The IRS wouldn't speculate on whether the limits would drop come October, but a spokesman did say the IRS is aware of the issue and is reviewing the current law. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
eBay got out of the phone business today. Why exactly an online auction site was in the internet phone game in the first place is an excellent question. Our senior business correspondent Bob Moon has more on eBay unloading part of its stake in Skype for around $2 billion.
There was plenty of head-scratching from the moment the deal was announced back in 2005. At the time, a company spokesman hailed it as the creation of an unparalleled engine for e-commerce and communications around the world. But customers literally never made the connection. Analyst Sucharita Moparu follows the online auction and marketing site for Forrester Research.
The consumers that were using Skype weren't necessarily using it to complete purchases and transactions on eBay, and the eBay transaction volume didn't materially change as a result of Skype. I mean, Skype, for the most part, exists for people who are trying to avoid making landline phone calls. I mean, when you're using it for that purpose, you're not going to then go and buy a product on eBay.
eBay execs say Skype will do better as a standalone company, but some analysts say the bigger worry for eBay is focusing on its core business. Colin Sebastian is an analyst for Lazard Capital Markets. He says Amazon, Google, and other online marketing giants have been steadily chipping away at eBay's dominance.
Their marketplace was decelerating even before the economy started to move downhill. They have been retrenching to make it more attractive for buyers and sellers. But I'd say that's a work in progress, and how it's connected to Skype is that this allows management not to be distracted by Skype and to focus full-time on the marketplace and PayPal.
That online payment system turned out to be a much better fit for eBay, and investors may yet see an upside from the Skype deal. Sebastian points out eBay is holding on to a minority stake and could see a payoff if Skype keeps growing. In Los Angeles, I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
Wall Street today, as I mentioned, not so good. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. The world's biggest advertiser pulled out its checkbook again today, just a couple of weeks after announcing a big deal with the National Football League. Procter & Gamble said this morning it's going to become an official sponsor of U.S. athletes at the 2010 and 2012 Olympic Games. Great news for the U.S. Olympic Committee and possibly for the networks that carry the games and some other high-profile sporting events, too. John Orand covers media for the Sports Business Journal. John, good to have you with us.
Thank you, Kai.
Obviously, Procter & Gamble, as I mentioned, is shelling out a lot of money to support the Olympics. The networks, though, are shelling out a whole bunch more. How are they doing in terms of recouping some of that outlay, ad sales?
For the Olympics, the networks aren't doing that well. NBC holds the Olympics. This Procter & Gamble deal is really huge news for them because one of the problems that NBC is having is that the International Olympic Committee and the U.S. Olympic Committee don't have a lot of corporate sponsors that are also taking a lot of media buys. Hmm. And that's what really drives the ad market on TV. And in fact, there are Olympic sponsors like Allstate and Acer. They're official Olympic sponsors, but they're not planning big media buys. And that is a huge source of frustration for NBC.
On to the other major sporting event of the next, 6 or 8 months that are going to be on television, the Super Bowl. How are ad sales doing there?
The Super Bowl is doing a little bit better than the Winter Olympics. It's doing much worse than in the past couple of years, but the economy is also doing much worse than the last couple of years. Right now, they look to be between 60 and 65% sold. That's what Media Week said. When Fox had the Super Bowl, a lot of ad buyers held back late and they wanted to get deals at the end. Well, Fox sold out early, so whoever waited, they really got burned. Yeah. So last year with NBC, everybody got in there early. And when then people that held back and waited, they actually got deals. So this year, everybody's holding back and waiting.
Was anybody expecting this sluggish of a market?
I think so. Most of the ad buyers I was talking to were waiting to see the upfront season end. And that's when the broadcasters sell their primetime entertainment programs. And they wanted to see how much the rates were falling on those upfront ad deals. And the rates were coming down about anywhere between 2 and 8%. And so that gives them a good basis to go and really negotiate for these high-cost NFL ad sales.
You say the ad buyers are waiting and holding back their purchases to see how things go. Is there any chance that the networks would drop their prices and maybe entice some of these buyers into the market?
Well, what we're hearing is that CBS is being extremely flexible in terms of the Super Bowl and the NFL, not only pricing, but also they have a whole big pregame show to sell, and they have a lot of other slots, and they're also trying to sell in prime time. So it's more than just one buy, and they're being really flexible in terms of that. NBC, which paid a ton of money for the Winter Olympics, is being much less flexible and really trying to stick to that number, which is another reason why the ad sales for the Winter Olympics is going as slowly as it is.
What if it just doesn't pan out for the networks in terms of sales? I mean, what happens if they don't get the ad buys and the revenue that they're hoping for?
Nobody expects that to happen. The Super Bowl and the NFL season, everybody expects that to come around. And that the Winter Olympics, that's the big concern. But for the consumer watching on TV, these are always going to be sports that are going to be on TV.
John Orand, he's a media writer for the Sports Business Journal. John, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Kai.
Late last summer, Ben Bernanke's wife had her purse stolen from a coffee shop outside Washington. The Fed chairman did exactly what you're supposed to do. He canceled his credit cards, told his banks about it, too. Still, a couple of days later, a woman started cashing checks from the Bernanke's accounts. Today, that woman was arraigned in federal court in Miami as part of an identity theft ring. Prosecutors say the group sent women wearing wigs into banks to empty their victims' accounts in person. I told you that so I could tell you this. In some banks now, it's all about seeing the real you. From Texas Public Radio, David Martin Davies reports.
Walk into the Louisville State Bank just outside of Dallas, and there's a display of memorabilia from the Louisville High football team, the Fighting Farmers. And you'll see a big sign that asks bank customers to remove their hats and sunglasses. It's an effort to fight crime.
I'm glad you noticed it, because that's why it's there, because we want it to be blatantly obvious when people come in.
Mike Pope is the manager of the Louisville State Bank. He says his bank hasn't fallen victim to robberies, and the sign keeps it that way. Pope says so far, his bank customers have been happy to comply.
We're not trying to be the fashion police, so to speak. It's a matter of, hey, you know, we need to be able to see their faces.
Banks across North Texas are part of a robbery prevention program sponsored by police departments. It's an idea supported by the FBI, and it's spreading across the country. Captain Kevin Deaver of the Louisville Police says the signs help deter what's known as the note job robbery.
They simply pass a note, get the money, and then casually walk out of the bank. They try to be discreet in what they do. They try not to draw attention to themselves.
The police then turn to the bank's surveillance cameras to zoom in on the bad guy. And in recent years, those cameras have gotten a lot better.
What we used to get was a VCR tape that had been recorded over 15,000 times. And by the time they actually did get robbed, the video is not worth anything. You know, it's so grainy and you can't make anything out.
With high-definition video stored on a hard drive, the image of the suspect is sharp and clear. But put on a hat, and that blocks the HD camera's view. Now police are back to square one. Nevertheless, many banks are reluctant to ban the arresting attire.
It's a little difficult to enforce.
Danny Garza is with the International Bank of Commerce based in South Texas. He says banks have better ways to catch a thief, like moving the cameras to better angles. But more important, Garza says the customer dress code would be bad for business.
We're dealing in a business of convenience, and we don't want to inconvenience our customers in any way.
Garza says in the competitive world of today's banking, a friendly bank is likely to win more customers. But even Captain Deaver admits that some bank patrons may not be willing to shed the sombrero.
You wear a cap all day and then you've got a hat, hair, and people don't want to walk in that way.
For those people with hair issues, there's always the drive-through lane. In Lewisville, Texas, I'm David Martin Davies for Marketplace.
Coming up, China and its new green infrastructure.
When you travel around China, every little city has these beautiful new modern airports. I feel a little bit embarrassed going back to the United States now. Even when I go to Chicago or New York, the airport seems so old and antiquated.
But first, let's do the numbers. Fears that the rally might be running ahead of the recovery gripped Wall Street today. The Dow Industrials sheared off 1.9%, 185 points. Closed at 9,310. The Nasdaq slid 2%, 40 points, finished at 1968. The S&P 500 gave back 2.2%, 22 points, ended the day at 998. Financial shares led the race to the bottom. Citigroup unloaded more than 9%. Bank of America dumped nearly 6.5%. American Express discarded close to 5.5%. Wells Fargo and J.P. Morgan Chase both peeled off more than 4% today. Airlines couldn't get off the ground either. Delta and AMR, that's American to you and me, dived more than 4%. Or is it Dove? I can never figure it out. Continental dipped 5.75%. Bond prices rose. The yield on the 10-year T-note slipped to 3.37%. And you're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Thomson Reuters, a source of intelligent information to businesses and professionals around the world. Thomson Reuters, knowledge to act. Now you can take Marketplace with you wherever you go. Tap marketplace.org into your mobile phone for the latest business news, decoders that explain financial terms, and updates on the economic crisis.
Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events coming up Wednesday. In Washington, the Labor Department releases the revised second quarter report on productivity and costs. The Commerce Department reports on factory orders for July. And on September 2nd, 1789, Congress created a permanent institution for the management of government finances, the Department of the Treasury. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdal. People have been reacting to this recession in different ways. When 29-year-old Aaron Heidman got laid off from his job at a paint store, he says life really hit a wall. He moved into his van, and he got to thinking about how other people were handling things, too. So on July 1st, he started driving around the country in that van, collecting stories about the recession for what has turned into an art project. Aaron, it's good to have you here.
Yeah, thank you.
It's not often we have to ask somebody exactly where they are when we get them on the radio, but where'd we track you down today?
I'm in Pittsburgh today, and I'm collecting stories from people affected by the recession. You know, I'm just trying to hear from as many people as I can. There are a lot of different people. There's actually a guy trying to wave me down right now.
What's your day been like, day in and day out? Do you go out and people just come up and tell their stories?
Pretty much. You know, when I pull into a town, I kind of find the central hub, you know, the downtown area, try to find out where the foot traffic is and, you know, where I'm going to get a lot of different unique perspectives from people in that city. And most of the time I'm able to have my roll of Tyvek paper next to my van where I can let people write their stories on the paper or on the vehicle.
For those of us who don't know, what exactly is Tyvek paper?
T tear-proof, waterproof paper. It's kind of the same sort of material that they use for like FedEx packaging. But I have a roll. It's 5 feet by 50 yards, and it is pretty much, there's still, you know, room here and there for more stories, but, you know, it's covered from one side to the other.
How are you paying for this? I mean, you have to do something to get by, don't you?
When I started this, I had $300 in my bank account. And I just said, you know what, I'm going to just do this. I had actually purchased a whole bunch of T-shirts, as many as I could afford. I've been selling the T-shirts, not nearly as much as I would hope. But a lot of people, they just love what I'm doing. And so they throw me $10, $20. You know, it pretty much all goes to gas.
There must be an amazing number of sad stories out there.
You know, I heard from a guy in South Carolina. He's a realtor. He was making $100,000 a year. This year, he's only made $6,000. He was out celebrating his 28th wedding anniversary with his savings. He really hasn't made much at all this year, but he didn't want to think about it. He just wanted to, you know, spend the night celebrating with his wife. He just wanted to think about what he has.
What's next for you and this roll of paper after Pittsburgh? You're going to put it in an art exhibit, I understand?
Yeah. It's an art contest. It's a big deal for Grand Rapids, Michigan. They have a $250,000 grand prize. There's 1,200 artists involved. I'm just one of them, but figured this would be a really good opportunity to express what I have to say, which is everyone else needs to have an outlet. There are so many people in need of that. You know, people just need a voice.
Aaron Heidemann, living out of his van, traveling the country, collecting people's stories of this recession. We've got some pictures of his van and some of the messages that Aaron has collected. They're on our website. It's marketplace.org. Aaron, thanks a lot.
Yeah, thank you so much.
As of today, the European Union has turned off the power for most incandescent light bulbs. Retailers can sell off what they have in stock, but the classic frosted bulbs of 60 watts or more will soon be no more. The idea is to move consumers over to compact fluorescents, and the same change is coming here in 2012. The light from those fluorescents is colder, you could say, but they use a lot less energy, and they'll help the EU reduce greenhouse gas emissions, too. Still, once you tell consumers anywhere that they can't have something, they want it. From Germany, Kurt Nickisch reports now that the ban has touched off a run on incandescent light bulbs.
An elderly customer is raiding the light bulb rack in a Berlin hardware store. What should I get? She asks her husband on her cell phone. Since all bulbs 60 watts or higher have sold out, she buys what's left, a stack of 40-watt bulbs. Store saleswoman Birgit Seelmann says Germans have been hoarding the classic light bulb.
First of all, they think the light is better. The light from the new ones is more harsh, and so they'd rather keep the old ones.
Seelmann wishes she could order more because they've been good for business. Sales of incandescents at some stores have quadrupled over the last week, but really only in Germany, not other European countries. Silke Karcher from the German Environment Ministry blames the media here for inciting the run. She says the people who are squirreling away all these Glühlampen, literally glow lamps, are wasting their money because the traditional bulb uses five times more energy than a compact fluorescent. And ultimately, they'll pay more.
The electricity price will go up. I mean, it has been going up rather steeply over the last few years, and that won't change. So I think many of these lamps that are hoarded now, they won't be used.
By the time the U.S. plans to phase out incandescents, manufacturers hope to make compact fluorescents glow just as warmly as the old bulbs. In Berlin, I'm Kurt Nickisch for Marketplace.
Despite its lackluster August sales report that came out this morning, General Motors has at least one thing going for it: name recognition. It's one of a handful of car makers that are recognizable just by its initials, GM. VW is another one. What about BYD? Not ringing any bells for you? It's a Chinese company, one that's already got an electric hybrid on the market there, and BYD has plans to have its cars on American roads next year. Just one more sign that China is very serious about green technology. Our China correspondent Scott Tong has the story from the southern city of Shenzhen.
The Shenzhen-based company BYD makes what it calls the first-ever plug-in hybrid for the masses. It runs mainly on electricity, as opposed to, say, the Toyota Prius hybrid, which goes mostly on gas. That makes the BYD really quiet. It doesn't emit many radio-friendly sounds. Here's the ignition, and here's the acceleration. BYD founder Wang Chuanfu claims this car charges up faster than any other competitor.
BYD's F3 dual mode makes China a world leader for the first time.
A bold claim, though it's hard to know if it's true since much of this research happens in secret. There's a lot at stake, says Michael Lasky, president of AVL China in Beijing. It makes equipment to test this next-generation technology.
So whoever can somehow create a lower-cost battery that takes up less space in the vehicle is going to be the equivalent of the next Microsoft.
China is proud that it's in the vanguard of electric battery technology. Last year, Warren Buffett put more than $200 million into BYD. So far, his investment has made $1 billion on paper. Here's independent auto analyst Zhang Zhiyong.
China's car industry traditionally lagged behind Europe, America, and Japan. So how can China catch up to the West, even surpass it? The opportunity is electric and new energy cars.
And the Chinese government knows this. It just told the country's top 10 domestic car makers to join forces in developing clean cars. And it's giving up to $9,000 in subsidies per car for local governments and taxi fleets to buy them. AVL's Michael Lasky says the Chinese government will play another big role, building the infrastructure, say charging stations. And China knows infrastructure, whether it's bridges or cell phone towers or airports.
When you travel around China, every little city has these beautiful new modern airports. I feel a little bit embarrassed going back to the United States now. Even when I go to Chicago or New York, the airport seems so old and antiquated.
Another plus for China is lots of people already use electric power to get around. About 100 million Chinese commuters ride electric bikes and mopeds. Every night, they pull the electric batteries from their two-wheelers and recharge them. When this 100 million people go from two wheels to four wheels, the efficiency of the vehicles they drive will have major implications for the planet. Environmental lawyer Charlie McElwee is with the firm Squire Sanders in Shanghai. He says on a per-person basis, the Chinese are still pretty energy efficient.
Currently, Chinese use about 25% of the carbon that Americans use. So if suddenly the Chinese population live like Americans, then you've got 4 to 5 times the amount of carbon going into the atmosphere than you have now.
One reason China matters so much environmentally is it has so many people. That's why its total carbon emissions now exceed those of the United States. China's trying to address the issue on several fronts.
It has very aggressive energy efficiency goals. It has very aggressive renewable energy portfolio requirements. I mean, these are world-beating standards.
Beijing calls this a green revolution, though climate change negotiators insist China can commit to more steps. Chinese carmaker BYD takes its next step with the introduction of a 100% all-electric vehicle. In Shenzhen, southern China, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, managing absolute return funds for all kinds of investors. Putnam Investments, a world of investing. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business.
This final note today, in which the big box retailer Target turns pinching pennies into an art form. This Friday, Target is going to put huge vinyl billboards up in Times Square in New York City. And that's fair enough, I suppose. Lots of eyeballs will see them there, I'm sure. Along with their theoretically New York-centric phrases like knish and coffee. After they've had their run, though, the billboards will be repurposed. Designer Anna Sui is going to cut them up and turn them into tote bags that you can buy for $29.99 a piece at Target. It's like printing money, seems to me. And that is Marketplace from American Public Media this 1st of September, a Tuesday. Today, the Dow heaved off 185 points, 1.9%. The Nasdaq lost 40 points, 2.2%. The S&P 500 dropped 22 points, 2.2% there. Thanks to Jennifer Collins and Renita Jablonski on our Morning Report crew. The Marketplace Morning Report is produced by Rod Abid. Coming up next time on this radio broadcast, a bare-knuckle approach to selling homes.
Sometimes it's brutally honest. People don't like it. But nobody wants to go on the market at the wrong price and waste 6 months of their lives.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Hope you can join us for that tomorrow.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.